Today on the Better Business Roundtable, we're going to talk about the challenges of closing day, part two of selling your business. We're joined each month by a team of experts that help businesses do this kind of stuff every day, sort through all the challenges they face in owning and running a company. And when it comes to closing day, there are several things you can do ahead of time to make all that go as smoothly as possible. We're joined in studio today by Kelly Schlotteroff, CFO and GM, General Manager of High Point Networks. Hey, Kelly, how are you doing?
Fantastic.
Good to have you with us. Chad Flanagan is here. Chad's partner in charge at Ide Bailey. Chad, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Dan Stoller, Market President for Starion Bank. Hey, Dan.
Morning, Steve.
And Tyler Leverington, Shareholder in Business and Corporate Law Attorney at Onstead Twitch. Good morning to you, Tyler. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Happy
All
to be
right.
here.
So if you got a question, Kevin, what's the best number here for our good folks?
800-228-0550.
That's how you do it, right?
800-228-0550.
Or studio at whatsonyourmindradio.com. That does the trick as well. Okay, so closing day can be challenging. Our goal today is to help it go as smoothly as possible for you. Tyler, I'll start with you. When it comes to closings, there's always surprises, right? It doesn't matter if we're talking about closing on a house, a business, whatever. Always surprises.
Yeah, every single time, without doubt. No matter how well prepared or organized you are, there's going to be something that comes up. I always tell folks, whether it's the day of closing or leading up to closing, expect a lot of phone calls, emails, be ready and available to communicate, and there's always going to be things to iron out.
Yeah, and I'll let anybody else jump in there, too. Dan, how about you? What perspective do you see on that? Always something to mess things up at the last minute, right?
There are always surprises, but, you know, like a good Boy Scout, be prepared. You know what's coming around the corner or try to predict the best you can. What's the future going to say?
Yeah, I think planning is key. You know, as much as we say, we may still have those surprises, working through letters of intent and memorandums that help outline things like working capital, structure of the sale, purchase price, all that stuff. If we can work through that stuff a month or a few weeks ahead of time, goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think an experience that I had is, you know, I'll certainly be prepared for, you know, the buyer to renegotiate anything, any terms, even on the closing day. You wouldn't expect that, but it certainly can happen.
And, you know, I think an important piece to note is why. Why are there surprises coming up on closing? And what a lot of folks don't always think about is we're selling a business here. And while we all have negotiated the key terms and we're working through details, the reality is that the business continues to operate every single day, all the way up to the closing date. And in the operation of the business, things change and things come up and things happen. And a lot of times those are some of the things that drive changes and create surprises. And, man, this thing happened with the operation of the business or with one of our major clients last week. How are we going to address it and be nimble and deal with this ahead of closing? So that's the source of where a lot of these surprises come from.
I think COVID's an example of that. A lot of deals that were up to the wire very close to closing that really buyers and sellers hit pause to deal with the effects of COVID.
Yeah, well, you think about the lead time from the first negotiation or first discussion about buying or selling a business to the time it takes to actually close. You know, that can be 6 to 9 months, maybe even longer. You know, the performance of that business can change. The dynamics of the business can change. You can lose key team members. Maybe some receivables went bad. You have some obsolete inventory. Equipment breaks down, things of that nature. It might be a different business 9 months later.
That's a really good point. You talk about, you know, the business lifecycle. Things are changing by the minute in business right now. I mean, COVID changes, regulations, how you do things, supply chain. We know that that's a crapshoot for a lot of people. You just don't know what things are going to look like. And Dan said it well. From the time you start talking about this, I mean, we ourselves have been involved in deals that have taken almost 2 years to put together. Well, you have this preconceived notion of what this thing is that you're buying 2 years ago. Somewhere along the line, that might very well change.
Right. You know, I was going to say, Steve, you'll hear Chad talk a lot about due diligence from the buyer's perspective, but I believe as a seller, I think you kind of owe it to yourself to do at least some light due diligence on, you know, who is your buyer.
That's a great point.
As far as how they, you know, can execute the actual sale.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, to your point, I think that we talk to so many sellers that, you know, top dollar is not their greatest motivation. It's really keeping the culture, being strong in the community, They want to make sure that buyer will take care of their employees, take care of their customers. And so to your point, performing some due diligence, asking for references from that party can go a long way.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, but I've seen deals too where people have said, you know, you guys weren't the highest bidder, or, you know, we probably could have got more if we stayed on the market, but we met you guys, we like you guys, or whatever that case might be. How often do the rest of you see that too, where the dollar amount is not the most important thing to the seller?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah. I would say a majority, more than half of the time, it's, hey, we've got a really great relationship with these folks. We know they're going to take care of our people. We know they're going to take care of our clients. And I think that is, you know, in this part of the country, in this region, we take a lot of pride in what we do. And a lot of business owners don't want to have built their business for the last 30 years and, you know, put their blood, sweat, and tears into it just to see somebody else run it into the ground or chop it up for parts and sell it, or otherwise kind of tarnish the name and reputation that they put so much love into building.
Mm. So let me ask you guys this question then. If you are a business that you think might be on the acquisition trail at some point, what can you do ahead of time to set yourself to be that kind of company where the dollar may not be the most important thing, but people want to sell it to you? How do you do that?
I think it's clearly identifying your values. You know, a lot of business owners talk to me about their values, and if I'm going to sell the business or if I'm going to buy another business, whatever comes together, you know, needs to meet our core values and meet our mission. We talk a lot about, especially in today's world, employees. You know, how do we retain employees in a market that's changing? Are you going to retain my employees, and what are their roles in your new organization going to be? So I think clearly identifying, we talked about that a couple segments ago, clearly identifying what your expectations are, whether you're buying or selling.
Yeah, and I think identifying, you know, the cultural fit too just kind of ties right into that. You know, what is your, what is the culture of your organization? Is it, you know, really really tight, you know, corporate-ish structure, or is it a looser structure? Depending upon, you know, where your organization is going to end up, what the buyer's culture is like, could be detrimental in terms of a fit, in terms of longevity of success.
Hmm. It was mentioned earlier that sometimes you'll even have people negotiating a closing. I think you mentioned that. How often do you guys see that, where there's negotiating right up to the finish line? Because that's a tough environment to try to get a deal done in. How often do you see that?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to me because I have seen it, and I've seen it change based on regionally where the parties are from. And maybe this doesn't actually mean anything, or maybe it does, but when I've got two parties who are local or even regional, there's far, far less of that.
Really?
There's a lot more of respect for, hey, this is the deal we've put together, this is what we're working on. And now that might not be true if there's some major change. If some big thing happens to change the business, maybe it's a little different. But where I have seen it is where I'm representing either a buyer or a seller, and the party on the other side is some publicly traded company from the East Coast or something like that. That's where you see you get close to closing, mm-hmm. and someone feels like they've got a little more leverage, and they're going to try and push you around. And there's a lot of different ways to deal with that, and it's just handled on a situation-by-situation basis.
Yeah, there's no instruction manual for those things. Some experience sure helps. Speaking of experience, Dan, we hear about mock closings. Tell me a little bit about what a mock closing is and how that can help some of this uncertainty at the final stage.
Sure. On some of our transactions, you know, they go really smoothly, just like you would draw them on paper. But what I find, especially on the larger transactions with lots of moving parts, is sometime, you know, a couple weeks before that transaction, to pull the banker, the accountant, the attorney together with the buyer and possibly the seller and their representatives and just walk through it. You know, here's what these moving parts are going to look like. Here's how we're going to calculate any holdbacks or any changes in the purchase price. Here's who needs to execute documents. We've had closings where the people who are supposed to close and sign the documents didn't know they needed to be there. And so you go through all that so you can identify, hey, we've got some gaps here. So we're not scrambling. Let's identify them. Let's get our questions on paper. Let's make sure we have a plan. So when we're sitting around the table on closing day, you know, we've already identified where we might have some pitfalls.
What else would you guys add to that, the value, Chad, of a mock closing?
I think that's a great exercise. And one of the obvious things is that for those family-held, closely-held businesses that are selling, where the seller's not 100% sure he's ready to sell the business, maybe that really puts a spotlight on the fact this is real and it's going to happen. Because we have had clients walk away from deals where they're not ready to actually sell.
Interesting stuff. We'll continue this conversation with the Better Business Roundtable as we continue here on the What's On Your Mind program. Kelly Schlatteroff from High Point Networks, Chad Flanagan from Ide Bailey, Dan Stoller from Starian, and Tyler Leverington from Onstad Twitch. We'll back with more on What's On Your Mind right after this. We're visiting with Kelly Schlatteroff, Chief Financial Officer and General Manager at High Point Networks, Chad Flanagan, Partner in Charge at Ide Bailey in Fargo, Dan Stoller, Market President for Starian Bank, and Tyler Leverington, Shareholder in Business and Corporate Law Attorney at Onstad Twitchell Law Firm. Gentlemen, we've been talking about this process of getting you up to the finish line, but there's this people part of that whole business too. And when you're considering buying or selling, you got to start thinking about what that means to the people around you. When do you tell your employees, Kelly, I'll start with you on this one. When do you tell your employees, how do you bring this conversation to people on the team? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I don't think there's any like hard and fast rule to answer that question. You know, I think it really depends upon the industry you're in, you know, the type of business, if you're like highly transactional versus highly relational. And then also, I think it depends upon a lot about if your sale of your business to the to whoever that buyer is, and if that buyer has a good reputation in the marketplace, where the perception is going to be a good thing of this sale, you could leverage that to get sort of a lift in the marketplace. And I think in a scenario like that, I think it's good to maybe make this public 2 to 4 weeks that there's this intent of the sale going to happen. Maybe if it's a highly competitive in nature, the buyer's maybe less known, it's more transactional type business, maybe you do want to wait till the closing day. So, I think it really depends on, you know, what the environment is.
Right. And related to that, too, is when you tell your own employees. And I think you're spot on in that it totally depends on industry and your individual business. If you've got a few real key employees who kind of make the whole operation run, it's not uncommon at all for a buyer to want to talk to those folks ahead of time. And in those situations, what we generally do is have them sign non-disclosure agreements, because you don't want one employee to get wind of something and maybe go start posting on social media about, hey, there's this big acquisition that maybe is or maybe won't happen. But that's not uncommon at all for employees to know ahead of time, because the buyer wants to know, hey, this business is a very different business, whether or not this one or two or three individuals are still part of it. On the flip side, there's been transactions that you don't necessarily want the whole set of your employees to know what's going on, just because people get a little spooked. You know, people hear that the business is being sold, and all of a sudden they're worried about, well, is my job still going to be here or not? So I think you have to look at every individual business, every situation, and that's how you figure out and have a discussion about what is best for this situation and my employees.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. In our business, when there's buying and selling being done, it has to go through federal government approval process from the Federal Communications Commission. So you have the signing, you get all everything lined up, and then you kind of got to let people know, because you got to file documents publicly, and you want to manage that message with your team and not have it come from, you know, a newspaper reporter. Not that we don't love newspaper reporters, but that's not how you want people to find out. So every industry, like you said, is just a little bit different on how that happens. Dan, I would think it matters too what kind of industry, when you're talking about the communication process and that culture fit. If you're a business that's creative, like a public relations company buying an IT provider or something, that's very different cultures in and of itself, and what they do and how they do it day to day, let alone what that each individual business looks like. So you can really have some interesting mixed marriages, can't you?
Yeah, you really can. And I think you said it best, Steve. You want to manage the message, and deciding who's going to manage the message and how the information is going to get out to not only your employee base, but to the public. You know, one of the things that we've seen, a little off topic, is, you know, we've seen business owners selling to a couple of key employees. And I think there's a really interesting dynamic there. You know, when do you let the rest of the employee base know that, hey, we've decided that we're going to sell the business to one or two top employees? And we didn't give you a shot to buy into the business, or maybe they don't appreciate that person as a leader or manager as much. So there's some interesting dynamics there as well. So managing that message, controlling how the information gets out, I think is really key to a successful integration most times.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Chad, when it comes to things like that kind of change, as we talked about time going on, I would think that when you're talking about receivables and the fluctuation you can see in those balances, that can be a really big deal to figure out too. What advice do you have on that?
Yeah, I think on day of close, one of the biggest things that can change, other than fundamentals in your business, is just the working capital. We see more buyers and sellers have disputes about working capital than almost any other topic. And it's because, as Tyler mentioned, it changes every day. So what's important there is we see a lot of buyers and sellers work towards a working capital target. And really, then, if the working capital on day of close exceeds that target, the purchase price goes up. If it's less, it goes down. It's a very fair way to address that. But it does require that you have a good close of inventory, you have good receivables, and maybe even a true-up period 30 days later, have an auditor come in and audit that balance sheet. That doesn't mean that there still won't be arguments between the quality of a receivable or obsolescence of inventory and things like that. But every bit you can work towards planning that out and having a good communication with the other party goes a long way.
Tyler, just kind of some, as we close up here, just some final thoughts. What happens next in the 60 days, you know, once you kind of get through that closing? What do we need to be mindful of there once we get to the finish line?
Yeah, the transition of the business itself, we've commented that these businesses, they continue to live and operate every day. And we all get around the table and sign papers and hoop and holler, and it's closed, and that's great. But you got to remember that there is a real business that's operating that we got to transition. And a lot of times it's more than just handing over the keys to the building and saying, here you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. Kelly, how about like operations and making sure that transitioning that from one to the other goes well?
Yeah, you know, there's an idea here that, you know, if you were selling perhaps a division of your business, or maybe you were some aspect like that, that you could set up a transitional operating agreement where maybe you were available to help transition for 30 to 60 days if you're the seller. Maybe there's on a contract basis, or maybe you have some other people that aren't going with the sale. You could contract those people, you know, to the buyer to really help it go smoothly. Just another kind of tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, I'd say that's actually very common, of especially in businesses that are relationship driven. Of if I'm the seller, I'm going to stick around for 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is, and I'm not going to come in 8 to 5. But you can reach out to me and say, hey, Tyler, I would love to meet this really big client. Let's all go to lunch, or can you facilitate a discussion? I need to form a relationship with them like you had when you ran the business. So that's very common.
Yeah, the interesting stuff there. As far as the tax implications, Chad, there's always a lot to think about there too.
Yeah, I think people always jump to the price in a transaction and get excited about that, either from the buyer or seller perspective. But tax really drives so much of how the net proceeds end up going to the seller. For example, sellers should be thinking about if there's a way to defer taxes. Is there a like-kind exchange, something they can do with those proceeds? Also, an asset versus stock sale has a big implication. Purchase price allocation does as well. So important that you work through those with your tax accountant.
Well, as you can tell, these guys have been through it. They can help you. Kelly Schlauderoff, CFO and General Manager, High Point Networks. Chad Flanagan, Partner in Charge at Eide Bailey. Dan Stoller, Market President for Starion Bank. And Tyler Leverington, Corporate Law Attorney at Onstead Twitchell. Guys, thanks much. We learned a lot. Have a great rest of the day, fellas. Thanks. Take care.